Welcome back to Tuned In with Radio Laurier. My name is Keegan Gingrich, and this week we are speaking with Mike Penny of the Jailbirds, a rock band based out of Southern Ontario. On this episode, we speak to Mike about the importance of strong mentors, the changing dynamics of the music industry, and remembering your humble origins. All right, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. I know it's been a busy week for you, so thanks for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We usually started off with a quick little rapid fire. So a couple of the questions are not too hard hitting, but it's just kind of like a, would you rather one or the other? And then the sure. last one's the really hard hitting one. So you got to be prepared for that one. All right.
Okay. Go?
Cool.
Let's do it.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
The best band of the 1970s.
The best band, in my opinion, that's a tough one. I'm going to say Black Sabbath.
Great choice. Okay. Are you a morning person or are you a night owl?
Night owl.
Cool. Gibson or Fender?
Gibson.
Gibson. And this is a really strange one, but chicken before the egg or egg before the chicken?
I would say... not diving too deep into it, I would say chicken for the egg.
Interesting. Okay, cool. I like that. It's a good answer. And now this one's a little deeper, but what are some words you live by? Like, whether it be personal, whether it be as a musician, is there like a motto or anything that kind of helps you to face the day or?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just try to, with music, kind of the keep it simple, stupid motto. Really like try not to overthink anything. It's hard to do. It's easier said than done, actually. But yeah, that's kind of what I would say is that's proven to be very beneficial for our process, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd imagine it's pretty hard too, because you guys, I mean, you're into doing production, you're into obviously recording vocals, everything. There's so much going on. I'd imagine it's pretty easy to overthink everything too. And to have a lot going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes it's a juggling act for sure.
Yeah. Fair enough. The main reason why, we're doing this series is because obviously over the past, 6 months, everything's changed immensely. I mean, especially for musicians who tour all the time, putting out new music, promoting all this sort of stuff. How has everything impacted you? I guess I'll separate it into two parts, both personally and kind of as a musician, as a part of the Jailbirds as well.
Right. Okay. Personally, so much like the only thing that really drastically changed is really how I would shop, if at all, and then lack of rehearsal, because, the job that I work was deemed essential from day one, so I haven't stopped working or anything, so that routine has kind of just been around since the start. But obviously, like, quarantining and not going out to usual things, going out to restaurants or whatever it is, that was weird for sure. Like, I'm sure everyone can agree. And then band wise like I kind of said already, like, we didn't rehearse or anything, and also we had a bunch of shows canceled, just like everyone else, and pushed back release dates, and it pushed back a lot of plans and stuff like that. But yeah, we kind of used it as a time to go back through old stuff and like kind of do all the things that we kept pushing off because we didn't have time for it. Now we're like, now we have all this time, might as well start cracking on some of these projects that we kept putting to the side.
Yeah, for sure. Do you find it harder to, I guess, make demos when you're in this sort of thing, or like write music, or do you actually find it easier as like a, it's just a natural thing that you do?
I find it's easier in a way and it's harder in a way, because I would prefer to write music and demo stuff out in the room with the other guys.
Right.
Okay. That yields the best results. And, but at the same time, having nothing to do any given night of the week all of a sudden, because usually I'm doing something every single night after work. There's always something going on. And then it just stopped. And then it was like, oh, okay, I have all this time. I can sit down and just be more disciplined with practicing and with writing and stuff like that. And that's actually proven to be pretty good. And since we started rehearsing, we've kind of like rewritten some stuff because, nice. Like I said, when we get in the room and then we're jamming a new song, it just stuff just happens, right? And so it changes automatically. Yeah.
You guys had a new tune come out a couple months ago, which is Watery Grave, which is an absolute banger of a song. The first thing I noticed about that is that the production on it is just phenomenal. The sound is really, really well done. So I'm wondering how, I guess the kind of process for going into that song compared to your previous Black River, doing all that sort of stuff. What was different about how you went into this?
Different was because basically we did it at the same studio the second time here at EMAC in London, Ontario with Matt Grady. He produced the first one, mixed the first one, and he did the same thing this time. Brian Moncars mixed our upcoming single. That was the only one that we got someone else to mix. But yeah, anyway, but basically like even when we went in for them from the first EP, the Black River, we went in there knowing that we're going to come back. And so we kind of spent a lot of time experimenting and finding stuff that we liked and finding the sound and kind of evolving and just learning from it. We took a bunch of notes. We had all the settings and all that kind of stuff written down so we could recall it really. And so when we went back in last November, we kind of had a lot of work done already in a way. We kind of already found a lot of stuff. And so it was a lot easier for us to get the tones, get the takes, because we were a better band. We'd been touring for the 2 years at that point after the Black River was recorded. So it was a lot easier this time around, and we got a lot more done than we did the last time as well. But it was really strategic too. We went in knowing what we're going to do. We had all the songs written and everything, just like the first time, but we were just, we'd done it before, we had more experience. And so it was, all around, including Matt, you know what I mean? Everybody, the whole team was just could do it better having done it the first time. It's just kind of how it goes, I guess.
Yeah. Practice makes perfect, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, was there like, in terms of the concept of the song, even was there anything that inspired you to go like, man, that's a great, great title for a song. That's a great thing to write about. Like what inspired Watery Grave as lyrics, conception?
The song started off with a different title, actually. It's one of our oldest songs, and Liam wrote the lyrics, actually. I think, I'm pretty sure it was like kind of like a dream, or just, it's a fictional story, right? It's about a pirate that's on the sea, and he gets kind of swept in by the siren, and she brings him to his watery grave, right?
Yeah.
And so, but the name, we changed the name right before when we were putting the EP together. Because the whole EP, the five songs on it, it's all a concept EP together. And so every song from start to finish follows a story linearly, and it's all a character, one of the same character, basically through five different stories. So Watery Grave is the fourth story out of the five. And it's just kind of following this character. I can't really say much more without giving away.
Yeah.
The other concepts, right? But that's kind of what it was. It wasn't, but then that's the thing, we didn't write it for, like, we kind of stumbled upon all these songs. Liam was like looking at, when we had 11 songs recorded, right? We
sure.
needed to break it down to five, and so we were going through them all and picking which ones, and Liam kind of pointed out at one point, these five in this order kind of have this loose story. And so I was like, you're right. Holy crap. That's really cool. And I actually went and rewrote some lyrics as well to make it have more sense as well. And it kind of just became this concept. And it's not like the songs are still like, they hold up on their own. They don't not make sense if you don't listen to it
right
front to back. But if you do listen to it front to back, it flows together. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something that typically you found has happened a lot? Or is this kind of like a first where you're just like, oh shit, this all clicks together?
It was a first. Was just like I don't know how Liam thought of it. I guess he had it all in front of him and went, oh, if you do that, it makes kind of like this storyline. And it was like, oh my god, you're right, how did I not see that? It was really, really cool. And then I was like, oh shit. And then I rewrote, yeah, like I said, rewrote some words and like kind of made it a little bit more cohesive. But yeah.
Yeah. And that even goes to show how important the group dynamic of songwriting can be, right? Like you can have a great idea on your own and go, hey, this is a sick thing. You put it in front of somebody else and 20 million different things happen. And they go, well, I think you should do it this way and maybe change this. And now you end up with a concept album, right?
Totally. Yeah, no, exactly. Like it's super important. It's really been, that's what our band is. It's all of our minds put together. That's how we get our sound.
I think it's super important. And that's a kind of a good segue into, if you wouldn't mind telling me about how Jailbirds came to be, because I know you guys have a couple year history now. You won the Mississauga Music Awards Best Rock Winner for 2018. Amazing. Right. Obviously that stuff doesn't happen overnight. So talk a little bit about the work that went in over the past few years.
Yeah. Okay. Basically Liam and I have been playing in a band together since like 2011 or so. Wow. Maybe. Yeah. 2011 or so. Yeah. In high school. And so we kind of had another band going with different members and that turned into the Jailbirds. And because our sound kind of changed, it was heavier before, like more modern, maybe more like, it's more metal, really was more metal. And so we kind of changed, it was more rock and roll kind of vibes. And so we're like, we kind of need to change the name too and change everything up and kind of restart. And then in the process of that, we had some members leave or whatever. And so we actually put out a Kijiji ad. Eric put out the Kijiji ad and we found the ad and nice. That's how we met Eric, which is kind of fun. But we met up with him and it clicked. So here we are 4 years later. And basically from the start, what our goal was is to rehearse as much as we can and write all the time and just play together all the time and try to be the best band that we can be and just try to get it to a point where we can live off of it really was the day one. We started rehearsing like 3-4 times a week. We were all in a point in our lives right out of college kind of thing. And we just had, we had a day job. We were still living at home and stuff like that. And so we had a bunch of time to put into this. And so we actually rented a storage unit in Georgetown because we knew the manager and she was super nice. And she let us do this. Weren't allowed to do it really.
Yeah.
But we ran power cables around and basically, just had like this huge, it was like this huge storage unit. It was probably like 20 by like 14 feet or something. It's pretty big. And in terms of jam spaces. And we just were blasting it. We actually had people like that were, storing stuff there. They would actually come by. They figured out when we would rehearse, which was like pretty much the same times during the week, like Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays at the same times it kind of was. And so they would come by specifically at that time to hear us play because we'd play a bunch of like Sabbath songs and like learning covers and our own stuff. And like we would talk to them and we kind of built it almost like a fan base in the storage unit, which was kind of funny. And it was really kind of neat. But that's basically what we did. And we just jammed all the time and really even before we played shows. And then we planned the Black River and basically like a year before we recorded it and we went and we wanted to play shows first. We didn't want to record something without kind of having that experience because Liam and I having played in a band together, we had that experience of like kind of writing a song and maybe recording it too fast. And then it kind of evolves if you play it more and it's like way better then. And then you're like, crap, I waited. You know what I mean? I should have let it breathe a little bit first. And so we kind of already knew that. And so we kept that in mind a lot. And so that's basically all we've been doing is playing shows, writing as much as we can, like jamming all the damn time. And just, that's what we like to do. It's fun. You know what I mean? That's why we do it in the first place is to play music.
At the end of the day, man, it always comes down to fun and passion. And I think it's something that I was speaking with Andy from Revive the Rose last week about too, and how if you go into it thinking that, oh, I want to do this to make money instead of, hey, I want to do this for fun. And if something comes of it, great. I think that's super key. And with you guys, especially having seen you live multiple times now, it's very clear that like the, the practice synergy thing pays off because while it's such a loud and great show, it's also a tight show. You know what I mean? Like you guys always put on something that's really just really great to watch. And you know that you guys have a good synergy. So, so it's nice to kind of hear that, you know, you guys came from such, I wouldn't even say such humble things, but like, you know, came from a storage unit and people are checking you guys out then and you're just like, sick, this is awesome. Right.
Yep.
So no, that's really cool. A couple weeks ago, actually, you guys got into the top 16 for Rock Search for 97.7, which is Hits FM. Talk about what an experience that is, man, because that's quite the honor for Canadian musicians, I'd say.
It was pretty wild. We had submitted to it, and we kind of didn't know if it was going to happen because of COVID, right? And we weren't really checking in on it because we assumed it was just not going out because, you know, you had to play shows and stuff. So we're like, obviously they're going to cancel it. And then on the, I think it was a Monday, I think it was a release day too or something. It was like the pre-save day for Watery Grave, something like that. And so we were putting that out and that was very exciting. And then all of a sudden 97.7 goes, hey, you're in the top 16 for rock. We're like, what the hell? Like, where did this come from? It was pretty wild because like that's something that we've been, everyone knows that contest.
Oh yeah. You know,
something that a lot of bands obviously want to win because it's such a great prize and it's great exposure and it's a lot of great things for any band. And although we didn't move on from the top 16, like it was an honor just to be like recognized like that. To be among some of the other bands, like we've played shows with them and we know them, friends and stuff. So that was really cool. It's a good time. And one of our buddies' bands is in the top four right now. And so that's really exciting. Wow. It's pretty cool.
It's kind of cool to see the community that is already built when you go into that sort of thing. You know, you're like, oh, holy shit, you guys are here too. That's wild. It's like when you walk into a party and you're like, oh, I didn't know you know this person.
Exactly. That's exactly what I just thought. Yeah. You kind of like, oh, yeah, you're here too. Yeah. It's cool.
No, it's a pretty cool honor. And I mean, even a couple of years back, you can point to the Glorious Sons who, you know, they won Rock Search and now look at the stuff that they're doing, right?
Exactly. Crownlands and
Crownlands as well. That's right. I completely forgot about them. So it's pretty big. So congratulations on that. Like, despite not winning, like that's still a huge, huge accomplishment. And you guys should be pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
One thing that's also been huge for you guys over the past year is Golden Robot. You guys signed a record deal, which is pretty sweet, man. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that also was an unexpected surprise. Last July, we got in contact with them. They contacted us. They found our music, and they just liked our music, and they wanted to work together. And so we ended up signing like a licensing deal with them, and it's been really good so far. Obviously, like they've had a huge part of helping us make Watery Grave a success. And so, it's been really cool. And that was again, like we had a bunch of plans for stuff and then that came about and it just like turned it on its head. And it's pretty surreal for sure. Again, for like somewhat, this is a label based out of Australia. They're an international label in all, they have like offices in all continents or whatever. But like to be recognized by someone across the planet who does this kind of stuff for a living, it's just like, it's pretty cool. Like we're just writing songs that we think sound good. And so when we get a lot of response like this, it's really humbling and it's really cool. Like it really is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And it shows you the power of what your music can do too. Right. Like,
yeah,
a lot of things start out as just, hey, this is a good idea. And then you work on it and obviously things progress, but I don't think for a majority of musicians, maybe you might have a different experience, but you don't go into songs saying, this is going to be the song that gets the signed by a record label. You know, like you're just like, this is a good song. I think it's great. And if somebody else enjoys it, that's amazing. Right.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Like we just kind of, at the end of the day, if we can listen back to it and we're happy with it, that's what we go with. It's pretty amazing that other people can resonate with it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I feel like on a similar note too, I think something that artists are often asked is, oh, you know, how do you think your music makes other people feel? And how do you think that resonates with them? How does your music make you feel, man? Like when you listen to the finished product or a demo, like what is the thing that you just go, that's my reaction. Like, that's how I feel about what I've done.
I would say like, listening back to it with all the work that went into those songs and all the, and the production and all that kind of stuff. And really like, just, I feel like really proud when I listen to our, when I listen to our recordings, just because everyone, not just like our band, but also like everyone else on our team, Matt and the engineers at EMAC and Jordan, our drum tech. And like, there's so many people that went into doing it, and it's just like to hear it back and it sounds the way it does. Like, I'm just, it's just great. Yeah. And I get a really good feel. I don't listen to our stuff like all the time or anything, but when it comes on the playlist or whatever, or on my phone or whatever, it holds up too. So like, that's kind of what we're going for. And so to hear it back, randomly, and it's not like, oh shit, that sounds like crap. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yep. I just listened to Led Zeppelin and now this is awful. Like, you know what I mean? But it holds up. So, it's a lot of pride for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that's been discussed a lot, kind of tying into that, is in music, there's somewhat of a lack of authenticity sometimes, you find. And I want to know how you guys stay so like authentic and genuine, guys, because like the same way that you are on social media, the same way they are at shows, like you guys are just like that in person, right? And I know everybody appreciates that. So I want to know what does authenticity mean to you as a musician?
We're super grateful if anyone comes to see us play. It can only happen if we have fans, and if anybody takes the time out of their day to show their appreciation and come to a show or something like that and wants to talk to us, like, yeah, all day. Like, you want to talk about our show, like, for sure. We're excited to do so. Like, it's honestly, like, we love doing it. It's just, it's cool. We like hanging out with the bands. We like hanging out with fans, whoever's there. We're just chill. We just want to have a good time and hang out with everyone. Everything's cool, you know? And that's kind of what we are. That's kind of who we are. We just hang out and play some songs, you know? And so we like to invite people into that and just hang out. Yeah.
Just hang out. I love it. What's on a bit of a pivot here, what would you say your main influences are as an artist? I know you got a lot of ties to Monster Truck and Sabbath and stuff like that, but who are the main ones for you?
The main ones, for sure, Miles Kennedy is a big one for me. He was really like the guy that gave me the confidence to sing, because my voice is very clear, and unlike a lot of my favorite singers, like Axl Rose, Chris Cornell, Dio, all these guys, they sing with dirt, and I can't do it, right? So like, it was always like this thing, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't sing, like, I can't sound like that. And then I heard Alter Bridge and Slash's solo stuff with him, and I'm like, oh, like, he sounds wicked, and it's so clean, and it just kind of gave me the confidence to go with my natural voice, right? Because, and this is like a thing that I learned from Chris Cornell too, I'm sure maybe even you've seen this, it's kind of like a famous quote of his, is for singers to just kind of get in a room and just see what your voice can do, kind of thing. Just see what happens, find your own voice, you know? And that's kind of, I resonated a lot with Miles, because we kind of have similar ranges and we kind of have similar tone in terms of the clearness and stuff like that. There's no real distortion going on.
Yeah.
He's a huge, huge influence on me, all over the place. His solo stuff, whatever, anything he touches, I'm like,
he's wicked. That's good
stuff. Him and, like, obviously I said a bunch of other singers there. Guitar player wise, Slash is my favorite guitar player for sure. Angus Young, Tony Iommi, Richie Blackmore, guys like that, guys that kind of like push the boundary, Eddie Van Halen, like, they always kind of like, I love players where you hear them and like, you know, the second that you hear them playing, you're like, that's that guy. Those are the players that I really, really like Slash. One time when I was younger, I heard the Lenny Kravitz song that he plays on. I forget which one it is, but he plays a solo on one of his songs, one of his hits or whatever. And I never heard the song before at the time. I think it was like maybe 15 or 16 or something.
Right.
It just came on. And then the solo started and I was like, that sounds like Slash. And I was like, that's so weird because this isn't Slash. I don't understand why he's on this random song. And then I looked it up or whatever. And I was like, sure enough, it was Slash. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, how did I know it was his play? And it was just like this kind of mind blowing moment where I was like, oh my God, like, he has a voice on his guitar. It's like the coolest thing. It was mind blowing. Yeah. Right. I'm just like, how does that work? That's crazy. You know, it's him. He's playing a guitar. Like, what? That doesn't make sense. And it's the coolest thing. And then, yeah, Eddie Van Halen's the same way. And Jerry Cantrell and guys like that. They just have a touch and then you just recognize it. It's really cool.
It's something that I feel like music fans appreciate, but when you're a musician too, you're like, if you can give your instrument its own, you know, signature sound, it is really its own voice.
Absolutely.
It's funny that you mentioned that in that way too, because even today, like there was, I think it was Blink or something that was on the radio. I'm like, that sounds a lot like Scott Rayner's drums from 1995. And sure enough, it was Scott Rayner's drums from 1995.
No way. It's
things like that, that I don't think you really appreciate as much until you're a musician. You go, God damn, it's so hard to find the sound, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly it. Yeah. It's a different kind of appreciation for it.
How long did that take for you to like get that, you know, because you're a vocalist and a guitar player at the same time and wicked at both. How do you manage that, man? Like, how much practice did that take to get where you are?
I was a guitar player first, and kind of started singing because I needed to, kind of thing. I just was like, I was always the one telling the singer in the band, oh, it should sound like this, and you should phrase it like that. And then it just got like kind of frustrating almost. And I was like, you know what, maybe I should just do it myself. And that's kind of how I started singing. And I'd already been playing guitar for about 5 years or maybe even longer than that. And I was almost against singing, right? I was like, I don't want a guitar player. I don't want to do that. And I started taking lessons, vocal lessons and stuff, but I was like 19 or 20 or something like that. And that's kind of how I started doing that. And it's funny because it almost discouraged me from being a lead singer and a lead guitar player at the same time. It's like, oh, it's a hard lot of stuff to do. And like, not a lot of people can, like, it's a lot of like mind splitting and stuff. You don't want to like split yourself too thin kind of thing, but actually it helps with singing, really, like, because one of the things that I learned from vocal lessons is actually like distracting yourself physically is a huge benefit to staying relaxed, which is a huge benefit for singing or whatever. And so playing guitar with moving my arms and doing all that stuff, it actually helps vocals because I can kind of like autopilot both, you know what I mean? And yeah, it takes a lot of practice for sure. Like, I would practice a lot at home. I practice every day and I practice, but it's just a matter of I'm lucky that I had a lot of mentors when I was younger who told me things early on, to like, they planted the seed in my brain when I was like 14, and it kind of like, you know what I mean, like concepts. Like, once someone told me, I forget who it was, I was at Guitar World in Mississauga for a long time. I think it was the owner Jim who told me this. He said, because I asked him, how do you play? He was really good at it. That's what it was. He was really great at singing and playing guitar at the same time. He's like, how do you do that? That's crazy. And he's like, you just got to do it. And you got to mess it up. You have to screw it up. You have to just sit there and do it over and over. And it's going to sound terrible, but that's what you have to do. And that's how you get there. And I was like, oh, okay. And then that's what I did. I just went home and started like trying to do it slow, and you figure out where you're going to place that word and stuff like that. And then it's just like playing guitar. It's almost like its own instrument, playing it at the same time kind of thing. You kind of just get used to how it works, and you get better at being able to do it, I guess is a good way to put it. It's a weird concept, honestly, but like, it actually, I am less comfortable singing without a guitar. And when I go to record, sometimes I'll even have a guitar just to kind of like distract my body from tensing up, because that's what you want to do, right? I just try to stay relaxed and just breathe, and that's what I go for when I try to sing.
It's all about being comfortable and knowing what you can do, right? Like, I think that's three quarters of it.
It's really like, it's comforting almost to have taken lessons for me, because then I can trust that it's gonna work and I'm not gonna like go up there and sound like shit. That's just, I don't want to sound like shit. I want to do it justice. I want to go up there and do the best I can do every time. So, you know, that's just what I do.
Yeah. And talking about mentors, like you're saying how you had some pretty strong ones in those people. You've done or you've offered lessons yourself. You've been a guitar teacher yourself. How yeah. have you found like that translates to those lessons for you? Because I mean, it's the same thing. Teaching is the same all over, right? Like when you learn the concepts on how to do it, the way yeah. you learned how to do it is how you give it to other people, right? So how rewarding was that for you to be able to pass that on to other people?
Oh, extremely. Yeah, for sure. I've been like a guitar teacher kind of on and off for about 8 years now or so, maybe 7 or 8 years. And it's extremely rewarding just to like see the moment when it clicks for a student and it's like, oh, and they're excited about something. And it's like, it's the coolest feeling really. And showing someone a song that they enjoy and stuff like that. And then just seeing the excitement out of it that they get is really, really cool. But yeah, like just, I've had a lot of bad guitar teachers too. And so like, I know what not to do. And I tried to not do that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like some teachers are like, oh, you have to start like this and you have to learn this way. And it's like, people learn differently, man. Just like go with what they want to do. They have to be interested in it. Right. And that's what my teacher did. I was with my teacher Dion, for 7 years or something like that. And I loved doing it. It was just great because he was just, what do you want to do? What do you want to learn? And I'll show it to you. And I'm like, I want to learn this Big Wreck song. And it's got this weird scale in it or whatever. And I don't care about that in the moment. And he knows that, right? That's the thing that I learned. He's like, he just wants to learn the riff, teaches me the riff. While he's writing it down, he'll go, oh, this is how the scale works. And this is what mode he uses. And he'll sneak it in. And then I'm like, oh, okay, this is great. Now I'm going to go research this because Ian Thornley did that. And then now I'm interested in it. Yeah. It was just like shit like that, man. Like he was really, really good. And I picked up on it really for sure. And I owe a lot to that guy. He really showed me a lot of stuff early on. And I feel like it otherwise would have taken me 10 more years to figure some of this stuff out, really honestly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
That's awesome, man. I think the topic of teaching and education with music especially is one that's, I think, more prevalent now than ever, whether it be outside of school or whether it be inside of school. Did you have much, like, within school, did you have much education for music, or was it just kind of like, oh, it's a thing that you can do?
In like middle school and high school and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of, like, I was kind of always interested in music. Like I remember like pretending to be in a band when I was in like grade 4, you know what I mean? With my friends, like I pretended to be the singer and we just like had a fake band or whatever. We would sing Queen songs and stuff. And then like, I don't remember like really being super into music class though, because it was all, let's play a recorder. Let's, you know, learn what this note is and stuff. And it was just boring, I guess. And it wasn't until high school where that's when I kind of heard like Thunderstruck on the radio and I was like, whoa, what is that? I want to do that. And then that was it. And that was when I was like 13 or something. And then I remember in high school, there was guitar class. I'm just going to move because there's so
many.
But I remember there was guitar class in grade 9 and I was like, oh, that's cool. I play guitar since the summertime or whatever it was. And so I took, that's when I kind of started taking guitar class through high school, and my music teacher was phenomenal, Miss Denise at Meadowvale, and she was just a gem of a human, and still is, I'm sure. She doesn't teach there anymore, but anyway, she was just great. Like I said, I'm lucky to have the mentors that I did, and I didn't realize it at the time, but yeah, she was fantastic. Just like knew exactly what you needed to hear, and it was it was great.
Yeah. All it takes is that one person and it just kind of, it clicks, right?
And they inspire you to do better and stuff. And they, you respect them. So you want to do good, right? That's the thing. It's like, you respect the teacher and then you're like, I want to prove to them that I can do this or whatever it is. Right. And it was great. Yeah. Really, really good.
I love it. Having done this for so long now, I say so long as if it's been like, you know, 20, 30 years, but having done this for the time you have, what do you think is the most difficult part about the music industry in 2020? What is the hardest thing to get past?
The hardest thing I would say is wearing so many hats because you have to now. You really have to know a lot more than musicians did like 20, 30 years ago and beyond. Like you have to be your own manager now. You have to be your own booking agent. You have to, you know, be your own website designer and all this stuff. There's all these things that you have to pick up on and you have to like do for yourself, unless you have a ton of money, then you can get people to do it for you. But most people don't. So you have to kind of learn how to do it on your own for the first little bit. And that's kind of what I would say is the most challenging part, because if you really don't absolutely love it and absolutely want to do it, you probably won't succeed because you're not going to put in the necessary, because it's so hard. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's the thing. It's so hard to make a noise in this very noisy niche market, right? Like it's very hard to poke through. And then once you do poke through, you have to keep poking through, and it's like, you know what I mean? It never ends kind of thing, or it feels like it. And so, yeah, there's a lot of obstacles to overcome now, even though it's almost, everything's like supposed to be easier with technology, right? Yeah. And it's kind of made everything harder in a way. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there are certain things that whether it be the industry or like at the, you know, the ground level of education, even like teaching people how to do this from maybe a younger age, like, hey, here's the basic way of running a business. Let's say the things that you need to do that are the basics of music production. Do you think that's something that would be beneficial for again, people starting out in the industry or even in schools? Is that something?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the main thing. That I guess I was talking about is like the business side of things, really. Yeah. That's a great headline for it is the business side. Not a lot of musicians have an understanding of that. And that's super important in 2020 and has been for a little bit. But that's the key, right? The business thing. And so really like even any business course would be beneficial. Anything like that. Because it just gives you the idea of how do I make a product? How do I, you know what I mean? All these things, do I have a budget? All of these things that have to go into it. I personally think business should be like a mandatory class, you know what I mean? And in high school or something like that, because even if it's just, you know what I mean? Like, not like a main thing, obviously like math or something. Sure. But it's super important for people to be able to have business mindsets and want to get into making their own businesses, because that's, you know, it's important for communities. It's important for the world to grow. And you know what I mean? It's just, it seems like it's being kind of pushed down a little bit, which is unfortunate. But I think I'm a really strong believer in getting lessons and like learning from other people's experience and stuff like that. And that's what I've always done. And like, I don't get the singers and stuff. Oh, I've never taken lessons and stuff like that. It's just like, who cares? You know what I mean? Yeah. Taking a lesson doesn't make you a lesser singer. And all the really good ones that can still sing have taken lessons. Just saying.
Good point. Yeah. What would you say to kind of wrap it there? What would you say to artists that are up and coming? You know, we've talked a lot in the past, even in general about music and about, you know, how to market a song and how to even create a song and a lot of stuff like that. We've talked a lot about that off the record. And there's a lot of people coming up, you know, even my age, people younger than me. What do you say to them? Like, how do you stay encouraged to keep going to do this stuff?
It's kind of just like a bug that bites you whenever, right? It's just kind of like something that never really goes away. I would say to young bands, really, like the main thing is just to write songs together and just don't worry about anything else. People kind of get ahead of themselves. I'm really bad for that, getting ahead of myself. And you kind of start playing shows because you want to play shows, you want to do all these things, and it's great, it's exciting, and you want to kind of get to it. But you just wait, just write some kick-ass songs first, just hold on, play some covers, whatever you need to do. Get your shit together first, and then you start playing gigs. Because once you start playing gigs, you kind of like get this momentum, and you kind of can't stop. And then you're like, "Oh crap, we have all these things that we want to do, and we Maybe like you're unprepared for something if it comes along. The thing that we wanted to be prepared for is if an opportunity were to come about for a bigger band or opening for a bigger band or something, we want to be like solid. You know what I mean? Yes, we can play that show and we're confident that we're going to kill it, you know? And that just meant rehearsing for 1,000 hours, right? 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say. Practice, 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 write awesome songs, and everything else will kind of just come. If you have kick-ass songs, people will come out of the woodwork for you, honestly. Like, it's just, it's that simple. Like, if you hear a kick-ass tune, you're going to get excited. It's as simple as that. You're going to be like, who is this band? Like, I love this, you know, and they're going to look them up. And it's just take your time with it. That's all. That's what I would say.
Man, I love it. Some very good words of advice. But I think it's actually a great place to leave off on too. I think you've said a lot of great stuff. So like I said, I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, my pleasure. Yeah.
I know it's been a hectic couple weeks for you, but what do you guys got coming up? Because I know you just put out a little teaser, funny enough, yesterday about a song that's coming up. So tell me about what the Jailbirds got.
Yeah, so we just put out a teaser for our next single called Dull My Brain, and it is going to be out on August 3rd. We have a music video coming for it as well, probably like later in August or something like that. And yeah, a lot of fun content coming soon. We've got a lot of funny photos and stuff like that. We shared one on our Facebook page today. Yeah, because we don't really take ourselves too seriously. We like to have fun, like I said. So we kind of figured, rather than doing the standard band photos, we should just kind of show our personality a little more, which is, we just like to joke around and stuff. Anyway, so yeah, we've got Dull My Brain coming about. And then obviously the rest of our EP is coming out as well. It looks like we're going to be doing a third single and then the rest of it later this year. So
awesome, man.
Yeah.
What can people look forward to when we get back to live shows?
We're going to be hitting the ground running. That's for sure. We're going to play everywhere. The one little bitterness about the Watery Grave release is just the fact that we can't play the song live.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the thing we want to do the most. And we want to get out there and play shows. And like, we want to tour Canada and try to tour Europe and the States and stuff. Yeah. Maybe not for the next little while in the States, but you know, and, we just want to do as much as we can. You know, we like playing shows and we just want to do it all the time. So, yeah, when like the second the go ahead is good, everything's safe, everything's okay, we're just gonna go ham. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, I love it, man. Where can everybody find you on Facebook, Spotify, all that stuff?
The Jailbirds Band on Instagram and facebook.com/thejailbirds for our Facebook page, or you can find all of our links on our website, www.thejailbirds.com. Lots of W's.
Lots of W's.
Find all our links there.
I love it, man. Mike, thanks again. I really appreciate you doing this, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Tuned In. Check us out on social media at Radio Laurier, where you can find all the latest updates from our continually growing selection of content. Know someone who would be interested in coming on one of our shows? Find all of our contact information on our website, radiolaurier.com. I'm Keegan Gingrich. See you next time.